Good morning, everyone. Morning to everyone online as well. This morning we're going to look at, although it's Palm Sunday, we're going to look at another little cameo scenario where Jesus is anointed at Bethany. And we're going to look at the passage in as it's given in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 26, and it's starting at verse 6. So if you haven't already, get yourself a Bible from the back so you can follow on, and you'll find it on page 996. If you're on your phone or at home, you're using your own Bible, Matthew 26, starting at verse 6. And apologize if things get a bit disjointed this morning, but I got back from China yesterday and half my brain, I think, is still at 30,000 feet, but bear with me. Has anyone ever done anything for you or done to you that was so overwhelming, so extravagant, it made you feel uncomfortable, uneasy, you know, just over the top? Well, I've had a few of those experiences this last week. So I've been speaking at conferences and I've been meeting various groups of people, and inevitably every evening and most lunchtimes as well, they've had a banquet, and I sit at the right hand side of the host of the banquet. And you know the Chinese banquets are where you sit at a big table and there's a lazy Susan that goes around with all the food, and it seems that the dishes never stop coming. And the host, unfortunately, is constantly taking something off the dish and putting it on my plate. And it just so... Well, it's not just embarrassing, it's very unhealthy, actually. And I've had to loosen my belt two notches over the course of the week. But we're going to talk today about something which was equally extravagant, but in a rather different way. So what happened at Bethany was that Jesus was reclining at dinner. The disciples were there, and all of a sudden a woman walks in with a jar of incredibly expensive perfume, worth a year's wages. She breaks that jar and pours it all over Jesus while he's reclining there. And the room goes silent, and then the disciples start grumbling. They're indignant, and the tension builds between the woman's extravagance and the disciples' indignation. And then Jesus breaks into that tension with some words that were so profound, surprising, and actually in some ways inexplicable. So there you go, folks, that's your sermon in 10 seconds. But I guess you'd probably want some more. But you're going to get some more anyway. Let's read the passage. I think I probably need these to read. While Jesus was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She's done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." And I want to focus this morning on three key aspects of that story. First, the context of where it happens. And then secondly, the contrast of the extravagance of the woman's action with the protest of the disciples. And then lastly, about Jesus' response, his response about poverty, his response about the message in the woman's action, and his response about that promise at the end, that unbelievable promise. So, context, where did this take place? It took place in the village of Bethany. Bethany in Aramaic language actually means poor house, or the house of the poor. This was a poor village, just outside Jerusalem, just a short walk from Jerusalem. And maybe there's some link with the story taking place in the poor village and the disciples' actual indignation about this seeming waste when that perfume could have been sold and the money given to the poor. I mean, where better to do it than in a poor village? Secondly, the event took place in the house of Simon the leper. Now, there's a paradox straight away, because lepers were totally kept out of society. They were not allowed to be with other people. And yet here is Simon the leper and Jesus is in his house. What that means is, of course, he must have been cured. He must have been cured of his leprosy in order to be able to live within the village, in the house. So actually, Simon had received that gift of grace that was about to happen to Jesus during that time. The whole event was taking place in a house of grace, in a village of poverty, just a short walk away from Jerusalem, where Jesus was about to die. So everything in this story points to somewhere. In a Hollywood movie, it would be that scene-setting moment that if you missed it, you'd struggle to keep up with the plot for the rest of the film. This really is a key moment in the leading up to the events of Easter. Secondly, the extravagance of what this woman did. An alabaster jar of so costly perfume that she poured all over Jesus, to the indignation of the disciples. The perfume, we know, was a nard, or spikenard, the very expensive perfume that was imported from India. The jar itself, the alabaster jar, alabaster is a very soft stone, usually white and translucent, and it's often used as vessels for liquids. In fact, archaeologists have found these alabaster vessels on burial sites, and they're made such that they have a very long neck, which when the contents are put in, that neck can be sealed either with a bung of alabaster or something else, but basically you can't unseal it. You actually have to break the vessel to get the liquid out, and once you've done that, you can't reseal it. So that the significance of this is that once that alabaster jar was broken, the whole content had to be poured out. And that's the significance of what happened here with that alabaster vessel and the perfume poured out. It was an all or nothing act of devotion. It was just everything poured out, nothing held back. And when we look at our spiritual life and we maybe consider it as an alabaster vessel, have we actually snapped the neck and poured everything out? Or are we still holding that alabaster vessel intact and keeping something back? Number one lesson for today, and we'll come back to that later on. But what happened next? The the way the story is written, you have to imagine perhaps that Jesus is here, he's reclining at the table. Well, not a table like what we think of. It's down here, and people generally recline there. And Jesus is there, and it's a very informal event, probably. The disciples may be around here somewhere, behind Jesus' back. And when the woman's poured the perfume over Jesus and she's leaving, the disciples collar her in order to say, "What on earth have you done? You've just wasted all of that valuable perfume that could have been sold, and we could have given that money to the poor." After all, it's the Passover. Passover is the time when we're instructed to give to the poor, especially. And what about just only a few days ago, Jesus set us the example when that rich young ruler came, and Jesus told him to sell everything and give it to the poor if he wanted to get to heaven. And what have you just done? You've poured all that perfume there, and we could have given it to the poor. Jesus is over here. Like every good teacher, he's got eyes in the back of his head. And he's aware of what's going on. And his response is just perfect. He said, "Stop bothering this woman. What she's done is something beautiful." Beautiful, that's a strange word, isn't it, really? But there is another translation of it that could mean worthy or holy. Worthy, it's a worthy act, it's a noble act. That's what he's saying has just happened. And he talks about poverty. And he makes this surprising promise at the end. It's very easy for us to misunderstand what Jesus said about poverty. Many people, many Christians, have misinterpreted the words about poverty and saying, "Well, yes, okay, the poor are there, but we don't need to bother about them." That's not what Jesus was talking about at all. He was actually quoting directly from Scripture, from words that we can read in the book of Deuteronomy, where it says, "The poor you will always have with you," but then he says, "But you will not always have me." What he's saying is, yes, you will always have the poor, and yes, you must always give to the poor, you must always look after them. But right at this minute, you need to be aware that something very special is about to happen, and that's the significance that you need to understand. So he's not dismissing the poor at all, but he's reminding the disciples of what he's been starting to tell them in the recent past about what's actually going to happen to him. Now, today's Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday is when the disciples and all the followers of Jesus thought he was riding into Jerusalem on a donkey as a king. That's what everybody thought. What Jesus is now reminding them about is the message he started giving them. "No, I'm not coming here as your earthly king to get rid of the Romans. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to die. And my death is going to open the doors to everlasting life, where I will be king. But a different sort of king from what you're expecting in earthly terms." So Jesus is turning this completely on its head. Whereas everybody in that room might have thought Jesus was being anointed as a king, because that's how kings were anointed in those days. They were anointed with over their head. They might have thought that, but Jesus is saying, "No, actually, this is preparing me for burial. This is not a kingly anointing. This is a preparation for burial. But it's a preparation for what comes after that burial, for life everlasting. And then there is this amazing statement that says, he says, truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, and then goes on to talk about the woman, what she's done will also be told in memory of her. But just think for a minute about those words. This is, for most people, this is an itinerant rabbi sitting in the house of a leper in a poor village, predicting that he is going to be preached about throughout the world forevermore. I mean, imagine you were sitting in that room and you heard those words. That must have been quite amazing to them. Did they pick up on that? That what Jesus was saying was what was actually going to happen, and not that he was here on earth, but he was actually the representative of heaven that was there and was opening the door to everlasting life, that the whole world would get to hear about consistently. And here we are this morning fulfilling that very prediction. But as it was made at the time, it should have been a world-shattering revelation to them. Was it? I don't know. Did they understand yet? Who knows? But that's what he said. And then he goes on to talk about the woman will be remembered. Well, we don't know. Well, as far as Matthew is concerned, we don't know who that woman is. So what Jesus is actually saying is not that her name will be remembered, but she will be remembered for the action that she took. And that's really the lesson here, is about, not about, you know, getting your name on a blue plaque on the building. As far as God's concerned, it's actually breaking the alabaster jar and letting everything out. And that's the real message that comes across in this, what this woman has done will be preached about throughout the world. Now, this story actually appears in all four Gospels, slightly differently told, but the message is the same. And Matthew's Gospel, Matthew is typically painting a word picture to provide the truth about Jesus, about the Messiah, to the Jewish people. Whereas John, in his gospel, he's the investigative journalist who wants to get all the facts down. He wants to get everything sorted. And he gives the woman's name. You know, he said, actually, this was Mary, who's Simon the leper's sister, by the way. And again, when the disciples are arguing about the waste of the perfume, John says, well, actually, it was Judas who started all this, because he was the group's treasurer. He was the keeper of the purse. And he instigated all this thing with the woman, wasting the money, because he wanted the money to come into the purse, perhaps because he might have been taking a bit more than his fair share. But that's irrelevant to the story. The story is about giving unreservedly, about what looks like waste, what looks like nonsense, what looks like rubbish to the world is actually beautiful in God's eyes. And so throughout the story, we're seeing the scene setting for what's about to come, for Jesus dying to rise again, to open the gates of the kingdom for everlasting life for us all. And all the bits of it point to a part of that story. So what does this mean for us today? First, let's look at the alabaster jar. As I've said before, when we look at our spiritual lives and we consider them as that jar, have we snapped the neck off? Do we let everything flow out? Or are we keeping it sealed up? Are we sitting here with the unbroken jar? And then the disciples protest. And as we look at our lives, are we sometimes protesting against outrageous things? Do we feel uncomfortable when people express their devotion and their worship a bit extravagantly? Do we stand there or sit there and think, oh, that's a bit much, that's a bit over the top? Or do we join in? Some of us, particularly me, being very conservative, not Tory conservative, by the way. So yeah, sometimes I do feel that way, and I shouldn't, really. With our money, do we sometimes mistake stewardship or looking after our money as an excuse for not giving, for extravagant giving? Do we sometimes hold back our gifts, our talents, rather than let them all out to be used for God? And third, do we sometimes think that what we do should be for the sake of getting our name on a blue plaque on a building? Or do we actually do things completely selflessly, not wanting anything in return? So all of these things we need to think about in the context of this story. So that when we leave today, we should be those people who act without calculation, who give without reservation, who love without keeping the seal intact. Because in God's economy, in the economy of the everlasting kingdom, what the world calls waste or rubbish, Jesus calls beautiful, Jesus calls noble, worthy. It's time to do something about it. So I'd like to invite you this morning to imagine that you're holding that alabaster jar in your hand, okay? And it's intact. There's the long neck, there's the plug in that's keeping all that devotion, that working for God, that giving everything to God. Hold that alabaster vessel in your hand. If you're prepared to give everything, if you're prepared to devote everything to God, snap the neck off it and pour it out as a sign that you want to give everything to God this morning. You want to be one of those people who does worship without reserve, without conservative view, who wants to give without reservation, who wants to not let stewardship get in the way of extravagant giving. Let be one of those people who wants to break the seal and let everything flow out for Jesus. So Lord, I pray this morning that we will be those sort of people, that we will be like that woman pouring that expensive perfume over Jesus' head, that we will, in our spiritual lives, as it were, pour everything over your head. Let us pour out our lives to you, our time, our talents, our money, our reserve. Let it all be poured out for you, Lord, so that we may in return enjoy the fruits of your everlasting kingdom. Lord, may this happen for us, to us, with us, about us this morning. Amen.